agnostics, long-haired weirdos, short-haired weirdos, vandals, hooligans.
Love the government, hug the government, love the government, hug the government, love the government.
Welcome to The Politics Guys, a place for bipartisan, rational, and civil debate on American politics and policy. I'm Michael Baranowski, professor of political science at Northern Kentucky University. I'm joined today by my conservative counterpart, Cleveland area attorney and defender of freedom, Jay Carson.
Hey, good afternoon, Mike.
Yeah, we're doing this on Friday afternoon, a little bit unusual. And as I was saying to Jay just before we started recording, is the one problem with that, of course, is they keep on making news even on Fridays. But and that will get into this late breaking story for us on the Supreme Court's decision on the Texas abortion case. But before we do get to that, I should mention.
You forgot to ask me how I'm doing, Mike.
Yeah, I didn't. My gosh, you know, it's been a crazy day. I didn't even care enough to ask you how you're doing. Of course yeah. I do. How you doing, Jay?
Mike, I'm like the Fox News Christmas tree. I'm on fire.
That was a very good one. Yeah, I like that one. Okay. But before we do get started with everything and everything, what is that? Well, we're going to be talking about the passing of Bob Dole, that Texas abortion decision I mentioned, the debt ceiling deal that both Jay and I called. So we will be patting ourselves on the back for that, certainly. The Biden-Putin talks, the diplomatic boycott of the Winter Olympics, that Department of Justice lawsuit against Texas, the recent vote in the Senate to overturn the COVID vaccine mandate that President Biden put into place and that's still hung up in the courts. Mark Meadows suing the January 6th committee, and our thoughts on, 2022 and beyond, kind of best and worst case scenarios as we see it. There's an awful lot. And before we get to that, though, we are just going to take a quick break and we will get started. So we open today just with, a tribute and appreciation for former longtime Kansas Senator, Senate Minority Leader, and Majority Leader, and 1996 Republican presidential nominee Bob Dole, who passed away this week at the age of 98. Dole was first elected to Congress in 1960. He moved up to the Senate in 68, where he served until 1996, at which point he left the Senate for his presidential run against Bill Clinton for the presidency. Dole was the Republican leader of the Senate for the final 11 years of his tenure, and he survived by his pretty remarkable spouse, Elizabeth Dole, who was Secretary of Transportation in the Reagan administration, Secretary of Labor in the George H.W. Bush administration, and a senator herself from North Carolina from 2003 to 2009. And just like her husband, she also ran for the Republican presidential nomination. This was in 2000. So, Jay, I know we could probably go on for a while about Bob Dole, but I just thought certainly whenever an important political figure passes, we like to mention that. And what are your Bob Dole thoughts?
So, this is, again, maybe folks who are not of our age wouldn't understand it. Yep. But for most of our political coming of age, right, other than Ronald Reagan, Bob Dole sort of was the Republican Party. He was this ever-present figure throughout the 80s and 90s. And before that, I guess we just weren't, aware of it. If you look back at his contributions, Bob Dole was chairman of the RNC in the 70s when he went to Richard Nixon and told him, you simply do not have the support to keep going. He was someone who was not flashy. He was not, didn't necessarily need to be the center of attention. All of which I think was a little bit to his detriment, right? When he ran for president, on numerous occasions. The other thing I think that held him back from becoming president was also he was, as a Senate minority leader and a majority leader, he was a deal maker. And it's tough to run when you've got decades and decades of deals, because there's going to be something someone says, well, you sold everybody out, you didn't, you got rolled and so forth. But in making a lot of the compromises that he did, he was able to achieve very much for what the Republican vision was. Most notably the Reagan revolution, Reagan tax cuts, later, I would say during the Clinton administration, the changes of you know, getting changing welfare as we knew it, and balancing the budget. So I think he was a great statesman, a great force, a very funny guy. Did not take himself too seriously, and beyond that, also, I mean, I didn't even mention. I mean, the you know, World War II veteran, seriously injured in Italy. I had the privilege of meeting Bob Dole, and I've got a picture that if I can find it, we'll post. Back in the 90s, and I also have if we have time, Mike, I have a funny sort of Bob Dole adjacent type story that is just kind of fun to share. It's sort of how our lives intersected very briefly, although not directly. But so that's you know, generally my thoughts. I guess the other thing is, listen, he died at the age of 98, and he was the last member of that generation who had fought in World War II. And I think that makes a difference in just terms of how they viewed the country, how they viewed the people they worked with. I think that was a defining experience that later generations didn't have, right? I mean, there was a sense, I think, among that, and this is something I've been told from other people who are of that veteran great generation who served in the legislature, that when all those members who had served retired, that there was something that was lost, just in terms of how they viewed the idea of service, the idea of country, and so forth. So.
Yeah,
that's my two cents and sort of insignificant, really, to pay tribute to the man he was.
Yeah, I would say that he was certainly not much of an ideologue. And the other way to look at that is he didn't have very strong convictions. But I'd say he was a moderate established Republican. But he was, I think, you know, generally just a party man, an organization guy, kind of like Mitch McConnell, really, who, you know, served with Dole in the Senate for more than a decade at the beginning of McConnell's Senate career. And in a way, it seems to me, he's almost sort of a Republican Joe Biden in some ways. I mean, he wanted to be president for a long time. He kind of patiently.
The guy just died, Mike.
He kind of patiently.
not to speak ill of the dead, but go ahead.
Yeah, he kind of patiently bided his time. I think he had a good sense of where the center of gravity was in the Republican Party, and he sort of oriented himself to that. There was a famous moment, and he was speaking in the mid-90s to the Republican National Convention, and he said, I'm willing to be another Ronald Reagan if that's what you want. Because Bob Dole was about greasing the wheels and getting the job done, and some people would say that it's not a good thing to have people in Congress that don't have strong convictions. And I don't think that's true. I think it's important to have a number of people in Congress with strong convictions because you need them, but you also need the deal makers. And we certainly see a lot fewer of those deal makers and people willing to compromise than we used to in the past. And that's really too bad. So there we go. And I will say Bob Dole is one of the Republicans who I actually did vote for president back when I was still voting for Republicans for president. So, all right. So Bob Dole, rest in peace. He certainly gave great service to his country, I think, fair to say. So moving on from that, shortly before we began recording this week's episode, very shortly, I mean like an hour or so before, Jay sent me a text saying, hey, have you heard about this decision? I said, yeah, I'm just going to email you. The Supreme Court issued a ruling on Texas's State Bill 8. And that's, of course, the law that prohibits abortions after 6 weeks. But you'll recall, in a twist that was designed to sidestep the jurisdiction of federal courts, the law is enforced not through state actors, but through what's essentially a citizen bounty system, where any citizen of Texas or any other state, whether they have any sort of personal involvement in the abortion or are affected in any way, have any sort of standing in any conventional sense, they can bring suit against abortion providers or those who otherwise assist in abortions after that six weeks limit, with a guaranteed minimum of payout, I guess, of $10,000. And that can be collected.
Abortion Batman.
Yeah, that can be collected. It can be collected by this for the same abortion against the same providers by as many people who want to bring suit. Now, in the ruling, in an 8-1 part of the ruling, the court said that abortion providers can sue state officials who license abortion facilities because, as Justice Gorsuch put it in his majority opinion, each of these individuals is an executive licensing official who may or must take enforcement actions against the petitioners if they violate the terms of Texas's health and safety code, including SB 8. But the court disallowed suits against court clerks and other officials, including the Attorney General of the state of Texas. Now, the split here was far closer, 5-4, with Chief Justice Roberts joining the court's three liberals in opposition. And in his partial dissent, Roberts wrote, "The clear purpose and actual effect of SB 8 has been to nullify this court's rulings. It is, however, a basic principle that the Constitution is the fundamental and paramount law of the nation, and it is emphatically the province and duty of the judicial department to say what the law is," citing Marbury versus Madison. Then he went back to 1809, United States versus Peters, and said that if the legislatures of the several states may at will annul the judgments of the courts of the United States and destroy the rights acquired under those judgments, the Constitution itself becomes a solemn mockery. He closed his partial dissent with this: "The nature of the federal right infringed on does not matter. It is the role of the Supreme Court in our constitutional system that is at stake." That's pretty strong stuff. Now, that, and again, that's from a conservative justice on the court, really the court swing vote, and the chief justice of the court. So I thought that before we got to the full out dissenters, and we'll talk about Justice Sotomayor's dissent in a minute, I wanted to get your take on Chief Justice Roberts's partial dissent and in general the majority's reasoning on this, Jay. So, I should point out we've only had a very limited amount of time to look through the opinions at this point. So,
I would say that in some ways I still come back to the focus that I've talked about every time we talk about this Texas case, is that we're still mostly talking about procedural stuff. It's not rulings on the merits, and what he was addressing there had to do with 11th Amendment immunity of state officials, which is something that's sort of a standard type situation, right? That you can't sue the state for doing essentially their government business. Now there are exceptions. So, for example, if the state is acting in an unconstitutional way, a state officer is acting in an unconstitutional way, of course you can sue them. But the weird balance of this legislation was that these state actors, in this case, there was a state judge who was being sued, and state clerks of court, essentially, being sued to prohibit them from taking these cases. I think that the majority actually got it right on that count. That say, look, this is the state trying to nullify a federal right, but do you have the right parties that you're trying to enjoin? And in Gorsuch's opinion, which was sort of the determinative opinion, it was weird. It's sort of like 8-1, 5-4, 6-3, depending on what issue you're talking about. He made the point that the courts, it's outside to the court's power to, issue an injunction against the world, essentially. And I don't have it pulled up in front of me because it was one of those really pithy quotes. But that's the nature of it, right? That you can't, of course, courts have to enjoin someone who can actually do something. And in this case, they said, well, the state medical folks who take care of the licenses, they actually could be enjoined. So there is standing.
And let's be clear on the
merits of can states simply overrule federal court decisions? I mean, he's right. I'm still not sure that you have to have the right defendants that you're suing in order to make that work. To be clear here,
that what this means then is that these bounty hunter lawsuits can go on. because the action of these licensing boards, this happens after that. In other words, if you can, they could act to not grant or renew licenses for these medical facilities if they violate the law. So that has no actual effect on this program, this scheme that Texas has designed to essentially evade.
No. I disagree.
Okay.
And again, this is based on quick reading on it. But if the abortion clinic has standing to sue, it essentially has standing to challenge the law.
Right. They have standing to challenge. But as Justice Sotomayor pointed out, basically, it means that it's a blueprint, essentially. She says, let me find the quote here. By foreclosing suit against state court officials and the state attorney general, the court effectively invites other states to refine SB8's model for nullifying federal rights. The court thus betrays not only the citizens of Texas, but also our constitutional system of government. And so, yeah, you're technically right there. But what that basically means is it's going to be very easy for Texas to go back and say that these institutions cannot deny or have no this SB8 has no role in granting or denying accreditation or what have you. And boom, problem solved, essentially, from Texas's perspective.
Yeah, but that's a tough political.
No, it's not in Texas, yeah, because it's the transparent. It was done for a very transparent reason.
Gosh,
Justice Roberts saw through it.
I think it's a tough.
No, it's not tough at all.
Fight
it's going
to
happen.
to say that we will not again, and I'm not sure that I think that might bring another lawsuit.
And the majority is going to be okay with it, because they basically, as Justice Roberts pointed out, Chief Justice Roberts, sorry about that, the majority basically okayed a fancy state nullification scheme. And I get your argument, Jay, and the argument on the court.
I'm not arguing. I'm just telling you what courts are saying.
Well, I get the argument. I'll put it that way, that, you know, well, it's a pretty weird thing to enjoin state officials like clerks and judges from even hearing cases. We don't really do that, right?
And or the attorney general,
right?
The point that they made is, look, that the attorney general has no role in enforcing this.
Yeah, and of course that was by design as a scheme to nullify a constitutional right, in effect. There's a part of Sotomayor's dissent that I think, I read this part and I thought of you, Jay, because she talks about limiting principles, and I know how near and dear.
I do like those. Yeah.
There you go. Sotomayor writes, in the midst of its hand-wringing over remedy, the court also complains that the petitioners offer no meaningful limiting principles for their theory. And she says, well, this is incorrect. The petitioners explain, whereas here a state law deliberately seeks to evade federal judicial review by outsourcing enforcement of the law to private individuals without any personal stake, while forbidding state executive officials from direct enforcement, and two, creates special rules for state court adjudication to maximize harassment and make timely and effective protection of constitutional rights impossible, federal relief against clerks is warranted. And I think that's a reasonable exception.
So I think there's a whole lot in there, right, that isn't in the statute, that isn't in any other case law, that just sort of is saying, look, this is, here's something we don't like, and you don't, yeah, people typically don't have standing, and these people aren't typically defendants, unless, yeah, as I pointed out, look, if you're going to sue to enjoin, you have to sue a person to enjoin them from doing some action, and I think as I read Sotomayor's dissent, it's sort of like, look, I really don't like this policy, therefore we should be able to enjoin these folks somehow, right? Even though I'm not sure exactly what action that they would take, right? What would the attorney general do? There's nothing for the attorney general to do. Regardless, I think this thing can move forward now.
But just to be clear, I mean, on that issue, I want to kind of at least close my part of this with, again, from Sotomayor. She says, you know, this isn't just a quibble over how many defendants petitioners can sue. It's whether states, and this is the issue, whether states, not just in this issue, but in any issue you want to dream up, may nullify federal constitutional rights by employing schemes like the one at hand. And she writes, the court indicates that they can, so long as they write their laws to more thoroughly disclaim old enforcement by state officials, including licensing officials. And that's what this decision says. I mean, I feel fairly confident that what the majority says here is, as long as you don't involve any state officials, so Texas could just tweak its law. And under the majority's logic here, as Chief Justice Roberts and the court's three liberals point out, then basically, it's anything goes. You can abridge any constitutional right. Nothing is safe. And the only barrier against that is if the state legislature feels like abridging that constitutional right. Hey, go right ahead. Second Amendment rights, First Amendment rights, doesn't matter so long as there's no state enforcement.
No,
where's the limiting principle there, Jay?
It still matters. Well, no, it still matters. And I think you're also... let's not confuse federal jurisdiction with state enforcement. You know, this is a question of is there a federal and there are state suits, and I've said numerous times before, I think that's the place where this thing ought to get settled. But I don't read this as saying therefore you know there if there are no state actors to sue. I mean, I think it's sort of the question right now is, can you sue state actors for something like this? And the majority said, yes, you can sue some state actors because they have essentially power, enforcement power over these abortion clinics. But you cannot sue other state actors who don't really have any role to play in this.
Yeah, I get that. But what I'm saying is the larger point is you could change this around and say that in maybe not a Texas law, but a Massachusetts or a New York law saying swapping out abortion clinic for a gun store. And yeah, you have the exact same situation. And yeah, that would be in direct violation of the constitutional right to bear arms, which is the individual right to bear arms, which the Supreme Court has recognized. And so that's my point, is that under this logic, as Sotomayor points out, that the states can basically use this scheme to abridge whatever right they want, because the only limiting principle is if the residents of that state are okay with the legislature abridging constitutional rights, and that is just insane.
No, I think you're missing the bigger point. This comes down to, can you get emergency preemptive relief? Right. That's the question, because of course, you can always sue under declaratory judgment to declare a state law unconstitutional. Anytime if any of these suits are actually brought, a provider can say, this is no good. It's unconstitutional. Get out of here. You know, as a defense against whoever is suing them, or as a counterclaim for declaratory judgment against whoever's suing them, and they bring in the state, and at that point and say, look, it's unconstitutional.
Right, right.
But I see what you're saying.
Sure.
Is, can you get that early injunction to prevent the law from taking effect? And that's the big game here.
That's a really good point, and I did neglect to point that out. It's a very important point. But I guess my larger point is, and this comes through, and we talked about this earlier, the chilling effect when you have a point where, I mean, clinics are just saying, you know, I don't want to have to deal with the possibility of, as this thing is being adjudicated, who knows how it's going to go, and oh, by the way, I could get sued a gazillion times by all these people, and there's a provision in this law saying that, you know, all these provisions to make it just as difficult as possible for abortion providers to do business in the state. The goal is for them to just say, well, it's just not worth our trouble. And it could be the same thing for gun stores in Massachusetts or something like that. And so the fact that you're absolutely right, and thank you for pointing that out. I was wrong on that point, but there's a significant chilling effect here, as there would be on, say, gun rights or speech or anything else, if a legislature chose to pass a law like that. with this unique enforcement mechanism. And so what the dissenters are saying here is this enforcement mechanism is so far outside the bounds and so clearly and patently designed as a way to have a chilling effect, if not an outright ban on constitutionally protected rights, that it cannot stand. And you're saying, well, no.
I'm saying the court's kind of going out of its way to reach a question that I don't think it needs to reach. If you follow me, this is, as I said, we're talking about, can you get that pre-enforcement declaration to knock it out completely? And I think if you could show a chilling effect, and look, I think the one clinic has that potential claim, right? And eight members of the Supreme Court said, yeah, this can go forward. So I guess I'm at a loss here when, you know, I thought you'd be happy, Mike. this is sort of, to me, it would look to be a win for abortion rights, abortion providers.
I think it's a blueprint for temporary nullification, and I'm not a fan of that. I'm every bit as outraged as Chief Justice Roberts is about this, horrifically bad.
You don't think so? Seem the kind of guy who gets outraged.
So you don't think?
Again, it's a partial dissent.
Yeah, but you don't think in using a quote where he talks about the Constitution itself becomes a solemn mockery. You don't think that he just didn't read that part of it, or saying that it is the role of the Supreme Court.
Certainly, but yeah. It's not. Regardless. Yeah. My point is that I think if you want to get to that question at some point of can a legislature do something to inappropriately evade a court decision or constitutional provision, I think that's a good question. And no, states can't nullify, but courts can't sit as a aren't supposed to sit as a super legislature.
Well, right? I guess what I'm saying
cases
is
cases and controversy, and this is sort of a court saying, we don't like your law, therefore you can sue the attorney general. The attorney general, what I do? What do you want me to do about this?
It's right? Not we don't like your law. It's that your law is exploiting a loophole in the constitutional order, and we won't allow that.
Well, loophole is a little bit of a loaded term, right? I mean,
sure it is.
One person's loophole is another's civil rights.
Well, let me put it this way:
there are plenty of people who are, did the crime, but they're let loose. Mirandized. I mean, is that a loophole, or is that their civil rights? I mean, the core of our legal system is that you've got to have somebody who can provide the remedy you're looking for.
And the court can provide that remedy. I mean, they can, I mean,
through a declaratory judgment action, I think. But I don't think there is an injunction, right? I don't think there's a enjoin someone from doing what?
From hearing cases, regarding this law.
Well, there you get into and it runs up against the 11th Amendment. So, I mean, it's more than just a, this is abortion or not abortion.
I think what this comes down to, at least for me, it's a different question for you. It's clear to me that this was a ruse designed by Texas to evade to evade federal authority.
Absolutely.
And the majority of the court said, yeah, good job. It worked. Congratulations.
Let me ask you this. Have any of these suits been filed?
You mean by?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not being rhetorical.
I don't know either. No, I don't know either.
$10,000 bounty suits.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Because soon as one is, then there's an actual case and controversy. And as I understand it, I think those are probably the state cases they're talking about. Again, we're looking at this having just, it just was released a couple hours ago.
Yeah.
But I think that's the way this gets worked out. And it's not a matter of there not being a remedy. It's a matter of whether that remedy is immediate pre-enforcement or whether someone has to actually take steps to try to enforce the law. I mean, I think that's a really different question, because the court seems to be of the pulling no punches, even the majority saying that this would violate Roe versus Wade and Casey. Gorsuch says that, I think, in like the first,
but our hands are tied
sentence of his opinion.
Yeah, but our hands are tied, basically. Or I would say, but we are choosing to tie our hands. I mean, because that's certainly not how the four dissenters looked at it, right?
So, all right, let's put it this way, because I think we're talking past each other, and maybe you're not understanding my point. If there is a law on the books that is offensive to the Constitution, and no one seeks to enforce it, and that is sort of the issue. Can a court weigh in, or would it be providing essentially an advisory opinion?
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Until there's an actual case or controversy.
And the argument on the other side.
The court said there is an actual case or controversy here with the state medical board, and that can go forward. Otherwise, okay, if someone actually sues, because there was a private defendant who was sort of an abortion Batman, or an abortion Boba Fett, if you will.
That's better. Yeah.
Yeah. Bounty hunter, who I guess was thinking about suing or talking about suing, or somebody thought he might sue. And he was named as a defendant. And this, the court was unanimous, even the dissenters saying, look, there's really no claim against this guy because he hasn't sued anybody. He hasn't brought any action. He hasn't done anything.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's to me, it's sort of the same thing, that as soon as if somebody does something, then okay, we've got a live case or controversy.
No, we're not talking past each other.
We're sitting as a super legislature.
No, I get what you're saying, and I just disagree. I think you're wrong. So it's not a matter of you need to be clear in explaining your position. I fully understand your position, and I reject it entirely. Is what I'm saying, basically. I get that, but yeah. So I think who knows what's going to happen in the end. Certainly. I expect, well, I wouldn't be surprised if it becomes at least, I wouldn't say moot exactly, depending on the outcome of the Mississippi abortion case, which we talked about of the last week, I guess, and we'll see how that goes. But
well, the interesting piece out of this whole thing, again, this is the hot take, is where Roberts shows up, right, in the mix.
Yeah, and I think
is that a tell as to where he is on the Mississippi case?
No, I don't think so. I don't. Well, I mean, maybe, but I don't think it matters, I guess. I think I predicted last week, whenever it was we talked about it, that Roberts will be part of the.
He would be with the dissenters.
Yeah,
anyway.
We'll be with dissenters. Yeah. I expect it to be a 5-4 decision, but we shall. Right.
But I mean, wouldn't you view this as pointing in that direction? As affirming your.
Well, I know I don't, because I don't really see this as an at least from Roberts' standpoint. I don't think that Roberts sees this as an abortion, because it's not. This, I mean, I think it's easy for people to forget.
You're saying he sees it as a nullification case.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's why he cited the specific cases he did. And I know everyone on both sides, or not everyone, but a lot of people on both sides are looking at this as an abortion case. I know that you and I are not. I mean, we are in a sense, but we're looking at it more as is this in effect nullification? And if so, is there anything the courts can do about it? And if so, what is that? And that's a much more kind of technical thing. But in a way, it's a bigger and broader question as well. And it concerns me that this question gets lost in the mix, because it is about an abortion, about, you know, the issue of abortion, which is such a hot button issue. And so everyone just kind of, you know, takes their sides, and there are these larger issues at stake. And certainly you and I disagree on, you know, what the court can do, the extent of its bill, or what it should do. But I think that this is a debate that's not being had as much in the general media as it should be. But then again, you know, I don't know if a lot of people would really tune in for that.
I've been saying for months that, you know, to a large extent, the whole Texas case is sort of an interesting distraction sideshow, right? And I think it's intellectually interesting, just because it presents these kind of funny questions of standing and who can be sued, you know, who can sue and who can be sued, and you know, when you can get preliminary relief versus do you have to wait for, you know, for some actual harm or more of a case or controversy. And those, to me, those are interesting kind of intellectual, you know, be a fun stuff to write law review article on type thing. But does it actually impact any substantive abortion rights? No, that all comes down to Dobbs and the Mississippi case.
Yeah. See, to me, and I see what you're saying there, but to me, and this is probably why I just got so worked up about this and I'm so disappointed in this decision is, you know, I've trained, spent my career as an institutionalist, which basically means to put it in a try semi-succinct way is that I believe that rules and structures are, you know, they greatly influence policy and in a variety of areas. And there's, you know, there could be this, the filibuster, a lot of things. And these are the things, the plumbing that kind of operates behind the scenes. And I think a lot of people don't appreciate how changes to these structures can have huge effects downstream. And I see this as potentially one of those things. And I think that's where I'm on board with Chief Justice Roberts and why his partial dissent really resonated with me so much.
So I see it. I mean, this is weird because I see it also as an institutionalist. And to me, that plumbing goes to the, you know, what's the court there to handle? Well, the Constitution says cases and controversies. And there's a rule that says, you know, the person, the proper party is the person who can remedy your ill, right? Remedy your harm. And I just don't think they've got the right parties. Except with, again, which everybody except Justice Thomas agreed.
Yeah. And I haven't read that dissent, but I'm really curious about that. You know, just did he just write, you know, abortion bad, I dissent, or I don't know what he did, but
abortion bad.
Yeah.
No, it's more kind of straight ahead same thing that he doesn't think that the. That there's been no threatened action by this board or any indication that they would take action.
Got it.
And therefore, there wouldn't be, again, there's no current case or controversy.
Gotcha. Okay. So yeah, it's unusual, people might think, for a sort of institutional plumbing sort of thing to cause such heated reactions. But there you go. I don't know. It's been a long year, and maybe that's part of it for me. But it's been a while since I've been so thoroughly disappointed in a Supreme Court decision as I am in.
I thought you'd be cheering this. This is weird. Yeah.
No, like I said,
moving forward.
It is the rules.
Here's the thing. Once that case does move forward, right, they're going to be able to tee up the merits.
Sure.
And I think depending what happens with the Mississippi case, Texas loses on the merits.
Oh, yeah, I get that.
It's over.
I mean, presumably, depending on what happens in the Mississippi case.
But, that's why I thought you'd see this as a win.
Well, I mean, I see. Well, it's not a. I see what you're saying. Short term, yeah, maybe. But I think that this sort of scheme is something that's going to be copied by a lot of other states and a lot of other areas. And so I see it as a longer term loss for our system of government and federalism and the balance of you know. So, yeah, I see it. Sure. Short term. Yeah. But I'm looking longer term on this. And I see it as a tragically bad decision in that sense. So there we go.
All right.
All right. Well, with that, we end our free ad supported segment of the show. If you would like to get the full show where we're going to be talking about, oh my gosh, so many other things, the debt ceiling deal, the Biden-Putin talks, and whether there's going to be a Ukraine invasion. I don't know if Jay and I have inside information on it. Maybe we do. Check it out. Anyway, the diplomatic boycott of the Winter Olympics, another lawsuit by the Department of Justice against Texas, a big COVID vote in the Senate,
again.
A whole bunch of stuff. Yeah, there you go. And again, that's available to you if you become a supporter, a Patreon supporter of the show. Just go to patreon.com/politicsguys or politicsguys.com/support. And we always put those links in our show notes. And so yeah. And if I almost forgot the important part, if you're not in a position where you can financially support the show, but you would like all of that stuff, just send me an email, mike@politicsguys.com, and I will get you all set up with free access to the full show. I'm happy to do it.